Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening. Wherever you get your podcast, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we got stories of y'all with people trying to fight their bosses. That's always interesting. We'll also talk about the Sarri's NFL team in captivity and something big going on in California with college athletes. But first, oh boy, this Antonio Brown thing is driving us all crazy, right? And by the way, I don't know if I should say that it's driving us all crazy, because crazy is one of those words we don't really use anymore. Like, Gabe, it still is driving me crazy. It's still an appropriate thing that we can say.
I thought what you had said with Mina last week was very measured, you know, that yeah. It isn't maybe the right thing to say anymore, so.
Yeah, I'm just talking about us, though. Like, I feel like, I know I can't say with Antonio Brown, I think he's crazy, right? We can't do that anymore, but I feel like we can be like, yo, this is driving us crazy, because I've been looking around, and I see the things that people are saying about this really in both directions, and I'm like, yo, y'all are wildin'. Y'all are wildin'. It is a measure of hyperbole in talking about how good or how bad the things are that he has done that strikes me. But also a measure of hyperbole, I think, in the defenses of him that are like, yo, what in the world is going on here? So, as you know, Antonio Brown got released by the Raiders. He's now going to play for the Patriots. And I think that a lot of people have kind of seen him as something between evil and mischievous, but a genius in figuring out a way that he could wind up playing for the Patriots after he was going to be stuck playing for the Raiders. And I'm like, are you really telling me that this dude's master plan was to take $30 million guaranteed and then turn it into $9 million guaranteed? Like, is that really what you think the plan was? That if he was some master, like, mastermind behind all of these things, it could come up with what in the world would go on? That the way he would do it is, I got 30 guaranteed million, but nope, I'd rather just go to 9 guaranteed million and then play it from there. Do you really think that's how that worked? Cause I have a hard time believing. Well, how about this? Maybe that was his plan. If it was his plan, I don't know why the hell y'all out here giving him credit for it. And people are like, yeah, well, now he gets to play for a contender. Ho, 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 ho. Hold on there. If you think his mastermind plan was to get himself in a place to play for a contender, then why did he go from Pittsburgh to the Raiders? Not that Pittsburgh is necessarily a contender right now, but why would you want to go to the Raiders if playing for a contender was like really your big primary concern? He wanted to get out of Pittsburgh more than anything else because they did not guarantee him enough money. I thought that that was a legitimate point for him to make. He wound up going to the Raiders. He wound up redoing his deal. He wound up getting that guaranteed money. Hey, good for him. He gets out there with the Raiders. It's that weird stuff that went on with the helmet and then him not showing up to practice and everything else. And it's like, this isn't really a good look, but the Raiders will deal with it as they will. Mike Mayock did the things that he did. I saw a lot of people being like, man, the problem is Mike Mayock out here trying to prove to people that he's the boss. Well, damn, he is the boss. Right? Like, one thing about being the boss is you do kind of sort of have to prove to people that you are the boss. And I do have a problem with people when they're in charge who do what I consider to be unreasonable things, self-aggrandizing things in order to establish their authority. But let's not pretend as though when you're in charge, establishing your authority isn't something that matters. Like, you got to command some measure of respect from the people who work under you. And you got to command some measure of respect from those people, if for no other reason than Antonio Brown just showed up and he's trying to get away with everything. And you can make the argument, well, that's what you got to do with star players. Okay, cool. But now you got to explain this to everybody else. And this isn't quite an NBA team, right? An NBA team got 15 people on it. You might be able to have one guy who does things and nobody else has to do those things. It's a little trickier to pull that off on a team with 53. It is. So, like, I don't know how I could be mad at Mike Mayock for saying, yo, either you're all in or you're all out, especially when it's like, yo, this helmet thing, it's not going to be resolved. We rolled with you when there was a time to ride with you about this helmet. Now there is no other recourse for us when it comes to you and this helmet. Get out here and play. I can't be mad at the dude for having that thought. I can't. And I'm honestly a little amazed at John Gruden playing good cop on this one. Not that there didn't need to be a good cop, but this is the dude that sent Keyshawn Johnson home. And so he's just kind of like, yeah, I guess I'm going to ride out with this. I found that to be like, okay, guy, I guess, if that's the play that you want to make, you can go ahead and do that. But I can't get mad at Mike Mayock for that. Let me tell you why else I can't get mad. And don't worry, Gabe, we were allowed to say this on TV, so I'm pretty sure I can say it here. Antonio Brown called that dude a cracker, and he just kept him moving. He called him a cracker, and he was like, oh, wow, sorry you feel that way. And just kept rolling. Like, it's hard to make the argument that Mike Mayock is out here on some draconian rule type stuff after that situation happened. No, man, Antonio was wilding. There's no way that you can argue anything other than he was wilding, unless your point is he was just trying to get himself released. I don't think he was trying to get himself released. Part of why I don't think he was trying to get himself released is that he really thought that video that he was putting out where he put John Gruden's voice on it was just to show, yeah, I'm back in the game. Like, I'm here. I'm all in on the Raiders. And I'm looking at this and like, yo, Gruden, you don't look at this and see this is obviously undermining your general manager? Like, your general manager had legitimate beef with Antonio Brown, and you're out here, I think you're one of the most misunderstood guys I've ever met. No, I don't really see the misunderstanding part. Maybe I just don't know this dude well enough. I have talked over the weekend with a few people who know Antonio Brown, and one word that has not come up is misunderstood. They have said that they really like the guy. They've said they think he's a nice guy, but they don't think that he's misunderstood, right? Like, the common belief in this is that he's a bit erratic, all right? He's a bit up and down with his behavior. I can't be mad at anybody who decides that they don't feel like putting up with that anymore. I can't. I get it. But this ain't no hero, right? Like, Antonio is not a hero. I don't think he's actually any variety of victim in this story. What I do think he is, he's a dude with a pretty damn good agent. Because as much as you might want to think that Antonio Brown is the mastermind behind this, somebody had to navigate these relationships in order to get him a fairly soft landing place. And that person would be Drew Rosenhaus, right? This is how your agent earns his percentage. He went on TV. He did that damage control. I think he had to know that, I mean, just like everybody had to know, including Mike Mayock, that once he took away Antonio Brown's guarantees, if that meant that relationship was over, like, that makes me ask some questions, honestly, about the relationship between Gruden and Mayock and what Gruden knew and when. Because anybody with any common sense had to understand that once you took it away and you made it a week-to-week proposition for Antonio Brown, he was never going to play for you again. Maybe that was Mayock's plan. If I had to guess, that was Mayock's plan. But I know enough about the way that team is set up that there's no way in the world that Mayock is going to do that without telling John Gruden first. And John Gruden has the power in that dynamic to say, nope, that's not what we're going to do. Gruden didn't do that. That wasn't his play. It wound up being, oh, okay, now this whole thing has played out as such. Like, if I were Mayock and I found out that Gruden was like, yeah, go ahead and use my voice in that video, either Brown's got to go or I got to go. But one of us has got to go. Because this can't work. This isn't what it's going to be. Right. And there's no reason to believe that John Gruden was going to be able to establish any measure of authority or maintain any order on the team, because he had already enabled Brown to a point where this wasn't going. I mean, this is what it was. And so then Antonio Brown is out of there, and now he winds up going to the Patriots. Here's my question. Which one of y'all thinks this story is over? Because I feel like if you think this story is over, that rests on a fundamental assumption. And that assumption is that at every step of the way, Antonio Brown has, quote unquote, known what he was doing. And I don't think that's the case. And the reason I say that the belief that everything is just going to be okay with New England rides on the assumption that he's known what he was doing is that I don't think the things that he's done that has gotten him into, for lack of a better term, trouble with his employers were totally within his control. Like, not that he couldn't, like, he's not responsible for whatever his behavior happened to be, but I don't think the things that drive him to act out or do things in the way he does them, I don't think they're the kinds of things that stop just because it's like, oh, you're playing for the Patriots now. They don't let you do this kind of stuff. No, I don't. I'm not sold that he sees the world through a lens that is so rational. I'm not. It is entirely possible that the things that he was doing in these other places, he's going to do in this place. And by the way, if he is going to do the things in this place, right? If he's going to get to New England and he's going to act right because they act right in New England, why couldn't you act right in the last place? Like, there's nothing honorable or nothing noble about that, right? Like, there is a certain, like, decorum of professional behavior that he didn't acknowledge, right? Like, if you're not going to be showing up to work when you're supposed to show up to work, you get why your bosses might be mad, especially the boss that you later or before, I can't remember which, decided to call a cracker. Like, yeah, you're going to have some issues on that one. So if you get to New England and you're like, okay, cool, now I'm going to act right. No, man, you could have been acting right there. You could have been acting right in Pittsburgh. You could have been acting right anywhere else, right? You just thought that you could get away with it. And if your belief, if you're Antonio Brown, is I did this because I thought I could get away with it, then how in the world can you blame Mayock for saying, hey, man, you're not getting away with this here? You see what I mean? Like you can't have these things all these ways. So now he is with the Patriots. Bottom line is, if he doesn't do what he's supposed to do with them, he's going to be gone. That's it. He will be gone. I won't celebrate it. I won't be happy. I won't be mad or whatever it is. I'm just telling you, it's a statement of fact. If he winds up there doing that same stuff, he's going to be gone. If he goes up there and does the stuff that they're supposed to do, holy smokes, man, they're going to be so good, and it's going to be such a problem. Such a problem. And at which point, Gabe, we then wind up with the joy, which is watching Patriots fans suddenly fall in love with Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon.
Yeah, I saw you tweet out about seeing AB jerseys up here in New England. I don't know how many there will be, but that will be a sight to see.
Yo, Antonio Brown might be the highest caliber star that could get traded to a new team, and that new jersey not be in the top 10 of jersey sales, because the home team got to buy you jerseys too. Did I tell you about when I was jersey spotting in Atlanta during the Super Bowl this year?
You did not.
Okay, so, you know, I went to the Super Bowl this year in Atlanta. And you're walking down the streets, you know, it's a lot of fans out there, and they all got on, you know, their jerseys for their team. Okay, cool. Yo, it was wall-to-wall white dude jerseys. Edelman, Gronk, Brady. I don't know, and to be honest with the Patriots, I don't know how many black dudes they've had over the years that were on the team whose jersey I would actually want to wear, right? Like, I get that to a degree. But you know who else's jersey I wouldn't want to wear? Julian Edelman. What in the world is cool about that? Like, especially if you over 6 feet tall and you wearing a Julian Edelman jersey, have you no pride? You need to be doing that jersey wearing to aspire to something greater than you. Right? Greater than what you are. But it was wild to me. I was like, damn, y'all ain't got no black people on the team whose jerseys y'all want to wear. I saw a Patrick Chung jersey. I did. And it wasn't Pablo, by the way. But I saw a Patrick Chung jersey on the street. So I want to see how many of those like super Patriots fans are going to be like, nah, this Antonio Brown, this is what I'm putting on for. Something tells me it ain't going to be that many of those jerseys getting sold. They're like, why I need to do that when I've had this Tom Brady jersey for the last 17 years?
That comes from the culture of the team, though, right? With making it feel like all these players are replaceable.
I do think there's something to that. Like, they have stars, like, or star caliber players, right? Like, they make the players seem replaceable. But, like, for example, Chandler Jones is a guy that maybe they should have kept. And I guess you can make the argument that the show's kept going since they got rid of Chandler Jones, and props to them. But that's like a really, really, really good player that for whatever reason they decided that they did not want to keep. They have kept Devin McCourty. They liked him so much they went and got a dude who looked just like him. You know, like, they got guys that they'll wind up keeping. Kevin Falk stayed there forever. In fact, that's the part that's interesting as I think about it more, Gabe, is that the guys that they wind up having that they keep forever are so often mid-tier guys. Right? Like Julian Edelman, that's a mid-tier guy who's been there forever. Devin McCourty, who's a very good player, but I still think to a degree is kind of a mid-tier guy, and they've decided that that's a guy that they're going to keep forever. Jackie Slater's son, Matthew Slater, the special teams guy, he's been there forever. Kevin Falk stuck around there forever, another mid-tier guy. Like, you can stick around there by not being too good, because if you're too good, then you might ask for too much money. That's where they are. But yeah, you think there's going to be a section in the crowd of fans who are like declaring their Antonio Brown fandom?
Yeah, I think part of it is also too that people don't want to invest in a jersey that is going to be expired or a year or two from now. Yeah, you spend $200 on a player's edition jersey.
Yeah, not buying it. Not buying it. Maybe that's part of it. But what about young Julian Edelman will make you look at him and be like, yo, this dude's going to be here forever.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the mid-tier guys. They keep all the guys that you shouldn't want to buy their jersey.
Yes.
Not star players.
Yeah, that is it. But no, I don't feel like the crowd's going to be full of Antonio Brown jerseys. There will be some, right? I don't need y'all hitting me up. I saw a dude with an Antonio Brown jersey. Yeah, what you think about that? I mean, yeah, there's going to be some. Nobody's denying that part. But that will be a very interesting relationship. And good googly, Gabe. If he starts acting up, what do you think that local Boston sports talk going to sound like?
Oh boy, we might even have to, a la Levitard show with playing, you know, doing a live look in on First Take with Stephen A. We may have to do a live look in on Boston Sports Radio.
Oh God, they hate me enough, right? Oh, like boy. That might take it to another level. But I want to, if the Antonio Brown meltdown happens there. Oh, I can't wait to see how that goes. Like the one bright side for Brown is going to be, it's not like the Patriots are going to throw any gasoline on it. Bill Belichick is going to be like, he's a great player, but didn't work here. Don't know what to tell you. Didn't work here. I got a little tired of his post on InstaFace. Was it SnapFace? Face chat? I can't remember what it was. Like all those things that make it clear that Bill Belichick has burner accounts on all those services. And you just want to act like he don't. So yeah, let's just see how this goes with Antonio Brown. Like, let's see what it is. But everybody needs to know, this not over. This not finished. This, I don't see a good guy anywhere to be found in this story. And you know what? That's okay. We don't need to be extreme on how bad anybody is in this, right? And my thing on Brown is this. If you're willing to make a complete fool of yourself, and he did make a fool of himself in the course of this. I don't think you could really make an argument otherwise. If you are willing to make a complete fool of yourself to go get something, fine, you can have it. I personally wouldn't want it that bad. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about the sorriest team in captivity. But first, after hearing me talk about ButcherBox for months, if you haven't taken advantage of their amazing offers, you need to listen up. Every month, ButcherBox delivers humanely raised 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage breed pork, and wild-caught Alaskan salmon directly to your door. Choose from four curated boxes or customize your own box with all your favorite cuts. And with free shipping, ButcherBox makes getting high-quality meat with no added hormones or antibiotics easier than ever. The last box I got had bacon, ground beef, chicken, pork chops. All of them were great, and my favorite cut of meat was definitely the chicken. I like chicken. Cook it up however you want it, but ButcherBox has a ton of awesome recipes and resources on their website that'll help you bring out all the flavor of each cut of meat you get from ButcherBox. And this month, ButcherBox is offering new members $20 off your first box plus free ground beef for the life of your subscription when you sign up at ButcherBox.com/Bomani. That's right. In addition to all the great meat you get, ButcherBox is knocking $20 off your first box and throwing in 2 pounds of free ground beef in every box for the life of your subscription when you sign up at ButcherBox.com/Bomani. ButcherBox.com/Bomani. So, Gabe, did you see any of the Ravens and the Dolphins?
What I saw was enough, which was fans with bags over their heads.
Wow. You know how hot it is out there in Miami for you to be wearing a bag on your head?
That's a cry for help right there.
Yeah, like with Saints fans doing it, at least they're indoors, you know? Yo, they, and I guess to be fair, all I saw was highlights, right? And what did I see in those highlights? Wide open dudes. Like, wide open dudes. Like, I'm not one of these people that's always been sure about Lamar Jackson. So I don't jump in and, like, look at his good performances as being vindication because I'm not sure how good he ultimately would be. I was not sure when he came in. I was not sure early. All of those things, right? So, like, I'm not one of those people like, see, I told you about Lamar because I didn't tell you about Lamar. Remember that before you let one of these clowns give you a misunderstanding of what I have and have not said about that dude, right? But threw 5 touchdown passes, and I did think his quote after the game where he was like pretty good for a running back, that was legit because I did say he was a quarterback. I didn't know if he was a good one. He threw 5 touchdown passes. Hollywood Brown just running past those dudes. Everybody seemed to be wide open while they were doing that. And the Dolphins, let Mike Florio tell it. He said on Football Night in America that all these players are calling their agents saying that they want to get the hell out of there. And the local Miami Bee reporters have denied that any of that is true. I don't know why they denying it. Wouldn't you want to get the hell out of there? Gabe, would you still want to play there?
I thought where you're like, oh, if you're still on the team, you should take that as an insult.
Yes!
Because that means that you have no value.
They must think you sorry, right? Like, if your goal is to be sorry, and the Dolphins say that their goal is not to be sorry, well, if your goal is not to be sorry, how did you accidentally wind up being so sorry? You know, by all accounts from what I've heard and people who are like more familiar and around that roster, this team is really, 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 really bad. Like, how you feel if you were to do Xavier Howard, the DB, who just signed like that 6-year extension or 6-year contract? He on that team from here on out. You are stuck, dog. You are stuck. Why in the world would you want to play there? No. Right? And the fact they gave you that contract means they think you good. If you think I'm good, I can't help you lose. Why can't you find somebody I can go help win? Because I don't want to be here to help you lose. They're so bad. Let me look at this roster, by the way. Can you name, how many players can you name on that team? Now that I think about it, I don't remember who played for them.
Josh Rosen.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ryan Fitzpatrick. Man, I had people who was trying to tell me about Ryan Fitzpatrick. Now, I don't think they'll be that bad. Fitzpatrick will get you a couple of wins. One, he's not good enough himself to get you a couple of wins, but the circumstances under which he might be able to help you get a couple of wins involve other people being good, all right? Let's find some of these other people. Oh, Devontae Parker, he still plays there. You ever heard of Mike Gesicki?
No.
He's a tight end. Never heard of him until today. P. Williams, Preston Williams, are you up on him?
No.
Nope, I'm unfamiliar. They got Alan Hearns. They got Albert Wilson, Kay Ballage. Oh, some guy named Jakeem Grant. I accidentally clicked his name when I was trying to click Kay Ballage. I've never heard of Jakeem Grant either. Kalen Ballage, he's a running back. You ever heard of him?
Nope.
Nah, I'm not familiar with him. Let's get a look at the rushing stats. Kenyon Drake had, bruh, 4 carries for 12 yards.
I am familiar with him.
Yes, 4 carries, 12 yards. M. Walton. You heard of Mark Walton?
No, I mean, also, to be fair, I'm not the biggest football guy, so some of these names could be something to someone.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm a bigger football guy, and I ain't heard of these dudes neither. Oh, Mark Walton, he went to Miami. That's how you know this is bad, Gabe. They out here just giving a chance to the hometown heroes.
And, underrated, they got rid of our man Kenny Stills.
They did. He's a little bit too good, apparently, among maybe other things. I'm looking at the defense. They got a dude, I can't pronounce his name, they got a half sack. Samuel Iguavuin, that's what it looks like. You ever heard of him?
Nope.
He went to Texas Tech. Never heard of that dude a day in my life. Like, I'm really looking up and down this list, and I'm like, none of these names look familiar. Imagine what this is like for Christian Wilkins, who went to Clemson last year and might have wound up on a team that ain't as good as the one he was on. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but still, it might feel that way sometimes. You ever heard of Bobby McCain? Yeah, unfamiliar. Unfamiliar. And keep in mind, I lived in Miami not that long ago. Like, I wasn't watching the Dolphins then either, but still. No, it's got to be miserable playing for a bad team. Me and my buddy Pablo have a disagreement because I think that the way that this tanking takes place is, like, morally repugnant. Like, I honestly believe that it is morally repugnant to do this. And the reason I say that it is morally repugnant is that these cats are out here trying to win. Like, this is what you beat into them. This is what you condition them for their whole lives, is that once you're on a team, try to win. Yet everyone above you actively wants you to lose. And that's got to be awful. That's got to be terrible. And it is wrong to ask those guys to do that, especially when you don't have to go this far to do the losing. They were sorry enough before they traded Tunsil. Right? Like, they were probably going to be the team with the number one overall pick before they stripped it all the way down to the screws. You ain't got to be that sorry in order to be sorry enough to pull this off. This is not necessary. And so you deal with the cruelty of playing a game that it legitimately involves risking your life.
That's what my follow-up was going to be. Pablo is a big trust the process guy. Is it different for you with football?
Not with him.
Not with him. Interesting.
Not with him. His belief is that this is what the money is for, and what you wind up with is it's an uncomfortable job. It's a job that really kind of sucks. But to him, it makes too much sense to do it, and that the fact that it makes sense overrides whatever this means about the workplace that you are in. And the workplace, though, that you're providing is one that you acknowledge is terrible. Like, you are knowingly asking people to come into a terrible workplace, and terrible in a way that is not fundamental to the job that we're talking about. So, like, if you ask somebody to be a garbage man, that's a terrible workplace to be in, but there's only but so many ways to make picking up garbage better. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Right. Like that's fundamental to what the gig is. The Dolphins, this is not fundamental to what the job is. This is not at all fundamental to what the gig is. This is just going too far and asking people to go out here and take all these blows while you actively want them to be sorry. And that's wrong.
And if they're bad, like I say, if the offensive line is really bad, they're just a bunch of stand-ins there, then the quarterback is at serious health risk.
The running back is at serious health risk. And if your quarterback is bad and is like throwing dudes into coverage and stuff, it's a serious health risk. Like, this is something that gets underrated about football, which is competence is the safest thing a team can provide, right? Because incompetence leads to dudes getting the hell knocked out of them, right? Like, competence is the best protection that you probably have in the NFL. And then just going out here and doing this. And I'm looking at that dude, Flores, like, yo, man, you don't know a setup when you see one? Like, I briefly said this on TV. But, yo, man, when they decided they were going to give that job to Brian Flores, I'm like, oh, boy. And one thing, I've noticed this all over the place. This happens in college football, too. If you got a really bad job to offer, all of a sudden, your desire to have a black head coach goes through the roof. Through the roof. The worse your job is, the more likely you're going to try to get some black dude to come and take it. That's simply what it is. That's the way that it goes. And so, Flores, you just coordinated the defense for the Super Bowl champions, and you about to leave that to go coach a high school team? All money ain't good money, my dude. Did you see the Matt Patricia dude that had the job before him? He waited a while until he could get something better. Now you just go down there and look. Ask Hugh Jackson. And granted, Hugh made his mistakes while he was working that job in Cleveland. But Hugh Jackson got a job where the plan was for them to do a lot of losing. And got fired for losing too much. If you think that this can't happen to you, you crazy. Oh, sorry. Can't say that. I gotta chill out on the crazy. Like, I really don't mean to be dismissive on that. I'm really trying to work on it. I just haven't come up with a word that works as well, but I need to do better. Anyway, and if you get fired, Brian Flores, I'm not sure anybody else is going to give you a job. You ain't Josh McDaniels, right? I'm not sold that somebody's just going to be like, all right, you were bad in that place, but, you know, I understand the circumstances that you were working under. Nah, the game don't necessarily work that way, playboy. That's not it. Why did you do this? Why did you take this? Why are you here? You took a job where they didn't have a quarterback. Why are you here? Whoa, this it just seems like horrific advice that you have received in order to take this gig. And they so sorry, Gabe. I don't know when they're going to stop being sorry. Like, it's obviously not going to be this year. But they talk about, yeah, they tanking for Tua. You going to throw Tua back there behind a terrible offensive line? How much sense that make? That's silly. It's ridiculous. That's the Dolphins. All right, Gabe, I'm going to need you to help me out a little bit here and make sure I get this story right as I relay this to the peoples. So a law has passed in California. What is it, SB 206?
That is correct. The Fair Pay to Play Act.
All right, and this is a rule that will allow college athletes in the state of California to make money off of their names and likenesses. Do I have that right?
Yeah, so the bill itself would prohibit schools in California from revoking scholarships or scholarship eligibility from athletes who profit off their own name, image, and likeness.
All right. Now, I hear a technicality in there, and you let me know if I'm tripping on this, because I've seen people who care about these matters and who I respect and like are really work on the things, like actually work on them, who take this as a win. But it says that the schools cannot revoke eligibility, right?
Yes.
But the NCAA can, huh?
Yeah, that's the technicality that you were describing. It seems that this pertains to the schools.
Yeah, so like if the NCAA revokes a kid's eligibility, is the school by California law required to keep playing them?
That's what I don't know.
Like, I don't know that part either, but let's get past that, right? Like, let us say that what this has done has put a situation in place where in California you can make money off of your name and likeness. Let's say that happens. Now, in theory, one would believe that suddenly now all the California schools become more attractive because now you can come over there and now you can get paid, right? And I also think it is very important that people understand that the idea of making money off your name and likeness is not simply just like if you were doing commercials, you know, or, you know, some form of advertising for another product or like as an endorser. this would also apply. An example that I saw in the story that I read about it was like, if you are a water polo player, you can use your name and likeness in order to sell like water polo lessons. You see what I mean? Like, so you could, you know, which was an element of it that I had not thought about is interesting, but I still raise this question. How exactly are most of these guys going to make this money off of their name and likeness? So if you're the water polo player and you are going to be selling water polo lessons and you're going to use your name and likeness, when are you going to have the time to sell these water polo lessons? Because the schools dominate your schedules as it is. So when exactly are you going to have the time to do this? That's a crucial point in all of this. So like if you, and let's say you were talking about doing endorsement. Okay, cool. So let's say that you play football at USC, or that let's say you play football. Let's look at the USC football roster. How many guys on the USC roster in a given year do you think would truly be attractive to companies or businesses looking for an endorser? Okay. So during like Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush, oh yeah, there would be a line of people who would be down to allow them, you know, to give them ways that they could profit off of their name and likeness. Reggie Bush could have started doing Subway commercials before he got to the league, right? But JT Daniels, I guess he's hurt now, but JT Daniels, he wasn't going to be able to do that, right? Even Sam Darnold, while he was there, he wasn't going to be able to do that. That wasn't going to be the same thing. That wasn't going to be it. So, like, how many of those dudes really out there are going to be doing commercials for stuff in Los Angeles? How many of them? Or we go to the University of Alabama. How many of those dudes is there really going to be a demand for their services to endorse products or to push products? How many of those do you think they're going to be? I don't think it'll be very many, right? I don't think so. And I'll give you another level of this of why it wouldn't be so on this. What I think athletes would be the best at selling is the things that they already sell for somebody else. Shoes, for example, like athletic gear, like those sorts of things. That's where logically it would be best to have these guys in a position where they could get their own bread. Well, what are they going to do? Negotiate individual apparel deals? That's not how it works. The schools already dominate that. So like the best real estate that they got in order to make that money, they're not going to be able to tap into. And then from there, there's still going to be fewer people lower down the chain who are just never going to be able to do this. Like if you're a second string offensive lineman, who's asking you to sell stuff? Like maybe a buffet or something? Right? Like who's asking you? Nobody's going to. And so while this law, I believe, is a good thing, it is certainly not a bad thing. Why can't we get to this place where people stop trying to find somebody else that can pay these kids and not put the onus on the schools to do it? Right? Like this to me is always such a half-ass argument. The idea that, okay, I don't think the school should pay necessarily, but guys should be able to make money off of their likeness. How many of them are actually going to be able to do that? Because what you're basically saying is that the only ones who deserve to get paid are the stars. The stars aren't the only ones that's out here getting these concussions. The stars aren't the only ones who are having to give up all of their free time to dedicate to this sport. Right? The rank and file dudes are having to do that too. Why do you think they don't deserve money? And you can say they don't deserve money, but if they was really that valuable, somebody would be paying for them to do that stuff. Yeah, that's fine. But let me give you something to think about. Tennessee lost that game to Georgia State the other day. And people are like, oh, man, Tennessee paid $950,000 for this team to beat them. No, Tennessee paid $950,000 for this school to play them. And you know why they paid them $950,000? Part of it was they thought they could beat them. Yes. The other part is you can't play a football game without two teams. They needed another team so that they can play a football game and make money, right? It doesn't matter how good your football team is. Nobody's coming to watch them in a regular season game if they're not playing against someone. The other team is necessary to have what they call a game. Therefore, that other team gets a check. And by the way, I think most of you guys don't know this, but all non-conference games, no matter the opponent, involve a check. So, LSU played Texas. Texas had to cut LSU a check. There's always a check involved when you make a decision about playing a game. Always. Just so you know that. There's always a check involved. So it's not just the sorry teams that wind up getting it. Anyway, why do I mention that with relationship to this? The guys that are second and third string are there because that is what is required to have a team. And having a team is what is required to get that money. Therefore, those guys also should be getting money. So there's no need for us to try to always put this off in some way that is basically the same as, I think the guys should be paid, but they shouldn't get paid too much money. And a lot of people have a default assumption when it comes to that about these college athletes. Yeah, I mean, cool, but they shouldn't have too much money. Why do you care if they make too much money? Why is that an issue? Like, that's a serious question you need to ask yourself. Why do you care if they get too much money? Like, why do you care if there's a cap on how much money they can get? Like, I don't hear nobody say that about these coaches. Hey, man, they should get some money, but hey, not too much money. Cats out here making $7 million coaching these teams. Ain't nobody been like, hey, man, you know, I think they should get paid, but hey, hold on, not too much. That would be ridiculous. What are you talking about? Like, that's crazy talk to me. There we go again. It's ridiculous talk to me. How about that? So yeah, good for this rule, right? Good that they got that in there. There's something to it. But in the end, the fact that the people who actually, like, for lack of a better term, employ these guys, the fact that they still get away with not having to pay remains the moral problem. Like, the fact they can't earn their own money is bad too. But the fundamental problem is the fact that they are unpaid by the people who make money off of them. The you should be able to sell your name and likeness game is really, let's not forget what that saying is, let's open up ways for even more people to make money off of you. Oh, over there you can get some too. But in the end, it's still facilitating somebody else making more money off of these players and the people who make the most money off of them having to give up the least. That's still what we need a bill about, not just about you being able to go out here and get some bread on the side.
Two important notes of distinction as well are that Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-12, which involves multiple states, he's spoken out against this thing. And then on top of that, the NCAA certainly is against it. So ultimately, at the end of the day, even if it's something that gets passed for the California schools, the NCAA can just make a player ineligible.
Yes. No. Like, I think it's cool that they decided to do this, but the fundamental issue remains fundamental. All right, we'll be back with If You Haven't Heard in a minute, but first, hiring can be a slow process. Cafe El Toro COO Dylan Miskiewicz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants, so he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates first. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from music.
Hello, this is Corey Groh, senior writer for Rolling Stone. Over the weekend, I had the pleasure of going to San Francisco to see Metallica perform with the San Francisco Symphony. They were calling it S&M 2 for Symphony and Metallica, and the 2 is because they previously did this in 1999. It was a pretty incredible spectacle to see because it was the first time that anything had been happening in the Chase Center, which is where the Golden State Warriors are going to be playing. Metallica, though, really turned it into their own home. They had a big stage in the middle of the arena, and they had all of the orchestra members, 76 of them, all surrounding them, and Metallica played in the middle. And they put on an incredible show where they kind of redid some of their biggest songs and put new emphasis on different things in there. It was really something to behold. You know, you would hear a song like One, which was their song about war, which usually opens with pre-recorded gun sounds and fighting and that kind of a thing. And, you know, it's a real thrashy heavy metal sound. But what they did with the symphony is they had the percussion section, the timpani and all the drums play the gun sounds at the beginning. And then they go into it and it sounds more like something you'd hear in a Western movie to begin with, almost like an Ennio Morricone opening. They took some of their other songs, some deep cuts that you don't normally hear too often. Like there was a song called The Unforgiven 3, and they had only the symphony play that, and James Hetfield, the frontman, sang it. It was just this incredible confluence of all these different things, these different worlds that blew me away being there. In some ways, it was like a Metallica convention. When you were walking around San Francisco the last 3 days, you saw Metallica shirts on everybody. It was something incredible, and by the end of the show, they showed the lights on the audience on the second show. There was two shows. On the second show, they showed the lights on the audience, and it was all these people holding up their flags from all over the world, you know, Mexico, Israel, Spain. It was a very special moment, and it's one that I'll remember for the rest of my life.
So, Gabe, you ever hear the first Metallica S&M record?
I did not.
It's really, really, really good. Like, I was a little disappointed to find out that they did an S&M 2, and that if I had known about that in advance, I would have considered going. Because one of the things about Metallica is Metallica, like, operates on a, like, Beethoven level of precision, which I normally think is, like, wildly overrated, but I would have been down to check that out. Now, the other thing I find interesting about this, and part of why I put this here, now, that was the first event at the new arena, right?
Yes, it was.
I feel like that is a metaphor. We are leaving Oakland, and we are coming to San Francisco with the whitest act we could find.
Yeah, the Metallica guys are from the Bay Area.
Yes.
So they have done, like, the Star-Spangled Banner and stuff for Warriors games.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But let me tell you something. It don't get less Oakland than a Metallica concert.
That's a fair point.
You know what I mean? Like this is a new ball game that we got over here. You know, they local. But the thing, it's not like they're not from San Francisco. You know what I mean? Like, they're local, but this is what it is. And it's also, by the way, kind of a fascinating window into, like, what the evolution of Metallica is. Because you're probably too young to remember people flipping out when they cut their hair, huh?
Yes.
Okay, but have you heard about this?
I haven't. Do tell.
So, like, they're Metallica, right? Like, you're a classic heavy metal band. And then I think the record came out in 96. It was Load that came out. And the long hair was gone. Like, they looked like grown-ups, and it was a giant freak out. And yeah, like, how you hear people feel about the music since then is interesting, is that it ain't nearly as great since that part. But it was the big, did Metallica sell out sort of thing. And then came the Napster situation, where Lars was going after people for the downloads because Metallica actually owned their masters. And then that alienated a certain part of the fan base, especially considering part of Metallica getting to where they were was with people swapping tapes, which is basically copyright infringement of a sort, right? Or I guess it wasn't copyright infringement so much then, because they were like, we want you to do this. And now they're like, yo, we don't want you to do this now that we're rich and we actually own the stuff. And now this is the billion-dollar arena that they've put there that Joe Lacob has built to show off for all the rich people that are in Silicon Valley, show off for all his rich friends. And the opening act is as rich a band as you can possibly think of. Just how it goes sometimes, man. Like, no shade to them. They earned that money. Good for them. And they still make, you know, hard-ass heavy metal music. All right. Good for you. But you're also the people that open at the rich arena that is kind of a symbol of gentrification in the area that you live in. It's just the gang.
What's wild, too, is that literally that area is a symbol of gentrification. Like, just south of the Giants ballpark is where the Warriors arena just sprouted up. And then growing up in the Bay, there was nothing there. It was just super industrial, bunch of docks, that sort of thing. And now my brother lives right in that neighborhood. It's absurd. I just went back there like a month or two ago, and it's like Brooklyn.
Yeah, man. There you have it. Can they have a Too Short show next? That would be dope. I bet they sell out.
This next one comes from Tech.
Hey, all. This is Drew Harwell. I'm a reporter at the Washington Post. And we covered recently what we're thinking is a first in the world for artificial intelligence, and that's a big major theft. This was a heist that was coordinated by the use of a voice mimicking software, an AI that You could feed in the voice of somebody and have the computer spit out sentences, phrases that they never said, but sounding exactly like the real thing. Some thieves used this voice duplicating software to fool the executive of a British energy company into sending about $200,000 to this secret account in Hungary. The money quickly disappeared. And the executive later said the voice on the other line really sounded like his boss. And he only was able to figure out later when he had called his real boss and was on the phone with him when the thieves who were using the voice mimicking software called him on the other line. So it was this crazy, like, who's who future sci-fi confusion thing. And this is pretty crazy. I mean, this AI software sounds really persuasive and really compelling. The voices sound totally legit, and yet this software is freely available. Anybody can download it. It's really easy to mimic anybody's voice. And so when you start to think about machines and computers that can fool what we sound like, and even in video, kind of what we look like or what we're doing, you have to wonder, like, are we entering this area where we're going to see a lot more crime like this? Are we going to see a lot more AI trust issues and AI heists?
Yes, we are. That's exactly what we're going to see. And it's bad. Gabe is bad.
This is insane. Insane. Literally like Minority Report science fiction come to life.
So bad. So bad. It's so bad. What are we supposed to do? Because there's no turning this back. What are we supposed to do? Like, the only way to turn this back is a science fiction movie where, like, all of us are in the streets in tattered rags with sledgehammers just randomly destroying machines. That's the only way we're turning back.
Yeah, not much more to say there. This last one comes from education.
Hi, my name is Lauren Camera, and I'm the senior writer at U.S. News and World Report. Since 2000, at least 47 communities, wealthy and majority white communities, have taken their schools and their tax base and splintered off from larger, poorer, and more diverse school districts to create their own. This phenomenon is called school district secession, and it's perfectly legal in 30 states. When it occurs, these communities take with them millions of dollars in property taxes, which fund the majority of school budgets, and they leave behind enormous financial holes in school districts already strapped for funding. A group of academic researchers recently published the first definitive proof that the phenomenon of school district secession also filters white students and black students and white students and Hispanic students into separate school systems, exacerbating school segregation and in some cases even driving residential segregation. To put it another way, school district secession results in splinter districts with higher percentages of white students compared to the districts they left behind, which have higher percentages of black and Hispanic students. As one researcher put it to me, secession may reflect this narrowing concept of public schools and who the public schools are for. Are they for educating everyone or just kids who look like my kids?
So Jemele Hill wrote a story for The Atlantic about where she was saying that the top black recruits should start going to HBCUs. You know, it's a provocative piece, like not in a contrived way, but it is intended to provoke in a certain way. And that did happen. I disagree with a lot of the premise that was offered there, but that's a discussion for another day. But one thing I did think was interesting was that a lot of people responded to that with, and mostly white people. So you're telling me that your answer for segregation is more segregation? And I was like, you will not. And that's not for every individual who made that point, but it's probably for most of them, because the people who are saying that are probably wildly oblivious to just how actively white people try to segregate themselves from the rest of us in so many ways. And the biggest way they do it is with schools, schools and housing. Those are the two biggest ones. And those are the two most problematic ones. All right. Like, this is destructive behavior, because what we have learned, again, 1954, separate but equal. It don't work, right? And so the government cannot mandate separate but equal, right? Because that was the Plessy versus Ferguson, was the idea that, okay, separate was okay as long as it was equal. And then it was deemed that separate but equal was impossible. It's still impossible. It's just different mechanisms for the separate part that the Constitution can't quite as easily fix, I don't think. But just ask yourself, why are you so concerned with the separate? knowing that it creates a guarantee for the unequal. What exactly are you trying to do? It's almost like the worst that this ain't an accident. Might want to give that some thought.
One other thing that I definitely wanted to add in here, even though I didn't think it was worth the full if you haven't heard story, was we have an update in the controversial dog park
of
Chevy Chase, Maryland. So the poor dog park is going to be dismantled after a hearing last night, Monday night, in Chevy Chase Village. More than 100 people packed into this public hearing that one board member called the most contentious and emotionally charged issue in the community's history. The village board voted 5-2 in favor of disestablishing the dog park. Basically, they're going to remove the gate fence, turning the dog park into just a regular park where people can still bring their dogs, but the dogs just can't go unleashed. And you know what unleashed means? Full unbridled joy by dogs, causing them to spontaneously bark. So I wanted to offer that update there.
I just want to say, by the way, just as a thought, knowing what we know about how much white folks love dogs, and I think that's a fair statement. Like, Gabe, I'm not treading on dangerous ground saying that, am I?
I don't think so.
Okay. For them to shut down that dog park, it's fair to think that dog park must have really been a nuisance. You know what I mean?
These like, people got mad.
Yeah,
woo!
Yeah. Yeah, like, these are people who apparently love dogs on the aggregate, at the median. I would say the median resident of that neighborhood is a dog lover. Lover, I tell you, lover. Yet they were like, nah, man, this got to go. It is possible that dog park was out of hand. I'm just giving you that as a possibility.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. Given the reported news towards the end of last week about Antonio Brown and Mike Mayock almost coming to blows, a bunch of listeners tweeted asking for voicemails about the time that either you or someone that you know, someone that you saw, almost came to blows with your boss, and it sparked a bunch of interesting stories. So here's our first from Casey in Texas.
Hey, Bo, this is Stacy in Texas. Wanted to call about the time I was playing college ball in Mississippi, and we had a defensive line coach that was pretty aggressive and, you know, in your face, and, you know, he cussed you out if you did something wrong. Just a little bit of tough love. Everybody understood it. One day during summer camp, and one of those nose tackles, I guess he had just had enough, and they were in the meeting room, and our D-line coach, man, he was just getting on to him about his hand placement, his technique, and he just mumbled like, man, I'm tired of this, you talking to me like this. And so our D-line coach was like, come again? I don't think I heard you, man. So, you know, my teammate stood up and he told him, hey, man, my mama don't talk to me like this. I ain't finna be talked to like this. And, you know, I'm a grown-ass man. So our D-line coach told us to cut the lights off. And we was all looking at him, like, kind of weird. And he said, hey, fools, cut the lights off. He goes, you so bad, you whoop my ass, I'll resign right now. He goes, if I whoop your ass, you're going to be here with me. And the tone in his voice, dude was a model citizen on the field. Model. Model.
Yo, that's real talk. Yo, if a man speaks with the confidence of putting his job on the line to fight you, it's probably not a fight worth having. Because at the very least, you might win, but it is going to be close. It's going to go to the cards.
One thing I forgot to mention was that we also opened it up for fights with coaches, and so that's where that one came from, which was hilarious. These last two, the guys didn't leave their names, but they are hilarious.
So, hey, Bo, you work at this soccer warehouse. A boss, every now and then, he's the owner, likes to come down into the warehouse, see how stuff's going on. And every time he does this, always ends up firing somebody, because he sees people working who's not working. Fire somebody. Talking to this kid, fires him. This kid's like 18 years old. Obviously, first time he's ever been fired. Decides he's going to spit on this man. I don't know if you know about like millionaires and how angry they are with like the way things go on day to day, all the decisions they got to make. But this dude was looking for someone to spit on him. Not really spit on him, but you know what I'm saying. But he decides flipping this table. Kid starts screaming at him, throws a punch at him. At our boss, Neo, out the Matrix, just leans back, dodges that one, cold cocks him right in the face. Talking to this kid, telling him how he need to respect his elders. Kid gets up and decides, I'm going to throw another punch at this man who might have just Mike Tyson'd me. And misses again, gets hit again, down to the ground. So boss decides, all right, I'm going to get this punk out the premises. Almost Uncle Phil out the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, just throws him out just like jazz. And kid decides, not done yet, got to defend my family honor, comes back to him, tries throwing another punch. My boss pushes him to the ground. He's like holding him to the ground, trying to like calm him down and stuff like that. Kid gets up one more time, decides, I'm going to throw another punch because, you know, the other one's worked. And my boss, just not having it again, hits him square in the face. Kid runs in, off into the woods to the parking lot. And, yeah, I've never really talked to my boss in a loud manner ever since.
Yeah, I do feel like, though, his boss ain't really got enough punching power. Like, how you, like, I feel like one of those should have made where you can't do this again.
Yeah, the descriptive there of, like, oh, he Mike Tyson'd me, oh, this happened. I would have thought if, like, there was a Mike Tyson descriptive in there, that person would have been down for the count.
Yeah, yeah, no, my man need to go lift some weights, get some more power behind them punches.
This last one, again, the guy didn't leave his name, but it is really funny.
Hey, Bomani. So one summer, I was doing municipal work, all university students, cutting grass at the park, planting flowers, cleaning up trash. We were all part of the union because we were working for the city. We had two bosses. One guy took it easy. The other one was young and new, kept volunteering us for work, pitching extra ideas to the big bosses. Not very popular. But at the end of the summer, one of the guys had to leave early, and we planned this prank to push him into the lake. He kept advising against it. He said, don't push him in the lake. Don't push him in the lake. But we were all 21, 22. We were getting ready to go back to school anyway. The job was finishing, so we ignored him, pranked this kid. And on our way out, I'm driving in my car. He's working because he was working afternoons that day. And as I drive by him, he's watering plants. He goes, hey, roll down the window. I rolled down the window, and he just hosed down the inside of my car with the hose. He got all over the stereo, all over me. And, I mean, I just lost it. I jumped out of the car. I charged him, textbook football tackle, put my shoulder into his stomach, and just dropped him right on the ground. And I probably would have just hit him right in the face, but I could see my face reflected in his sunglasses, and I looked like a lunatic. So I just stopped, got back in the car, drove home, and then I got a call from, you know, the area foreman later that night. I had to go in, but luckily, because I was part of the union, we went through the grievance process, and everyone was just like, you shouldn't have tackled him. Turns out I separated his shoulder. But they all agreed he should never have sprayed me with the hose, so we both got a written warning. And then 3 days later, I went back to school, and then the job was over. So kind of got away with it.
Yo, you took off on your boss and lived to tell the tale? Yo, that's good. Yo, you need to put that in your obituary. I'm impressed. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsors, ButcherBox and ZipRecruiter. Also, thanks to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Corey Groh of Rolling Stone. Check out his story. Y'all, Metallica doing S&M 2 at the new Chase Center. Also, thanks to Drew Harwell of the Washington Post. Check out his story on AI voice mimicking. And thanks to Lauren Camera of U.S. News and World Reports talking about secessions, accelerating school segregation. You can check out her story. And thanks to Gabe for getting us up to speed on the dog park in Chevy Chase. And, of course, thanks to all of you who tried to fight your bosses or witness someone who did so. All right, be sure to check out the Woj Pod this week. He chats with Clippers coach Doc Rivers and Heat coach Eric Spoelstra. Also, remember to subscribe to The Right Time on Spotify. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You didn't give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.